Before I start the fourth chapter, I would like to ask one question. Who is a Hindu? Maybe I can ask everybody, who do you think is a Hindu? That's what I'm asking. I'll ask everybody and then I'll answer that. Who do you think is a Hindu? Anybody can answer. Who is a Hindu? We are all Hindus, right? Most of us. Yes.
It's a misnomer. People living in Indus Valley were known as Sindhu or Sindhi or whatever. But Persians call S as H and Westerns call it as I. So it's known as Indus River, but it's Sindhu River. People living in that civilization were known as Hindus.
Right.
Later on.
Yes, that is a very good answer. So people living in the Indus Valley, which was a Sindhu River in Persian, Sir is pronounced H, so they started being called Hindus. So that's a wonderful answer. But in the modern context, now we are all Hindus, right? Whether it's a misnomer or what, we call ourselves Hindu. So who is a Hindu? Let me ask that. Who is a Hindu? Follows Vedas, yes. Oh, what else?
One who is born in Hindustan.
Born in Hindustan.
The thing I think of is someone who born in has an elephant god and a monkey god.
Yeah, so worships
really unique.
Worships the forms, the different forms of God, yes. So born in India, revering the Vedas, having the forms of the god, yes.
Lives the Gita way of life.
Lives the Gita way of life, yes. Anybody else?
Except
yes.
All.
Yeah.
Accepts all
religions and all gods. Yes.
Somehow culture comes into it.
The culture. Right. The Hindu culture, the Hindu way of living. Yeah, very nice. Anything else?
Yeah. Vegetarians.
Vegetarians, yes. They are supposed to be, but a lot of them are not. But yes. But so, Swami Tejomayananji gave four main indicators. All of these are very important, all that you told. One is who believes in the prominence of the Vedas and that the Vedas are the truth. So Vedas, as he said. So accepting the Vedas as our scriptures, and then of course Bhagavad Gita, and then living the Vedas, as she said, living the Bhagavad Gitas is very important. And then believes in incarnation. That God is not only there in heavens, but incarnates, appears. And as she said, we believe that he incarnated as Krishna and Rama, and then the dust avatara of, as she mentioned last week, of Vishnu Bhagavan. But also we believe that God appears again and again. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. In the fourth chapter, Bhagavan will tell us, whenever dharma is on the decline, adharma increases, I appear. And if you truly accept the Vedanta, then you accept everybody as a divine. And God is appearing again and again, not only in India as Krishna, but as Jesus, as Muhammad, as Buddha, as Mahavir, as Guru Nanak. So again and again, God appears in different parts of the world to re-establish Dharma. And why? In the fourth chapter, Bhagavan will say, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chatushkritam. To remove the evil and protect the good, I appear again and again. And then the fourth chapter will continue the topic of karma a little bit, how the karma should be dedicated to the Lord. And Swami Tejomayanandaji says the four qualities of most important are belief in the Vedas, in incarnation of God repeatedly. In karma, the theory of karma has to be very important for us to believe, where a person gets whatever they are getting is a result of my good and bad karma. So even if a child is suffering and say has leukemia at age 6 months, then the child has not done any karmas, but we believe in rebirth or reincarnation, that we carry our karmas. The jiva, as she mentioned, carries its karmas and then they may manifest at a different birth. And then the fourth one is ashrama dharma, the varna. That means grahastha ashram, all the brahmacharya ashram. So what do you do in student? What do you do as a householder? What do you do as a vanaprastha retired? And then what do you do as a sannyasi, and how we should evolve from student to householder, then slowly withdraw from the world and devote your life to God. So that was the question of what do you call a Hindu? So a lot of these topics are covered in the fourth chapter. And then when we do the Gita Dhyanam, we don't do the whole one. We just do the first and last words. But if you read the whole Gita Dhyanam, it says, Sarvopanishado gavo dogda gopala nandanaha partho vatsa sudhir bhokta dugdam gita mritam mahata. So Upanishads are the cows. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the milkman who milks the essence of the cows as Bhagavad Gita. Now who drinks the milk, or why does the cow give the milk? For the calf. Because the milkman is very smart. Nowadays, of course, they do it by machine, so the poor cow doesn't have a choice. But in the olden days, the milkman would bring the calf close to the cow, and the cow, out of love for the calf, would just pour out the milk, and then it was easy for the milkman to drink. And actually, they would have the calf suckle on the udder of the cow, and the milk would start. I remember my grandfather used to be a dairy farmer, and he used to do that and then milk the cow. And then, so the Arjuna was the calf. So the milk was given for Arjuna. The milk of the Bhagavad Gita was given for Arjuna. But who are the also benefits? Sudhihi. People who have the right understanding or wish to have the right understanding, people like us, benefit, even though this knowledge was given by Bhagavan to Arjuna, but it was for the benefit of all. So we all benefit from this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Gita is the essence of the Upanishad, which is the cow. Now the Upanishads have this beautiful phrase called Tat Tvam Asi. Tat, that consciousness, Tvam, you, Asi, you are. So you are that consciousness. We all are that consciousness. So how is it explained in the Bhagavad Gita? So he says, Tvam, you means all of us, is in the first six chapters. So the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita deal with who I am and how I should live. Karma Yoga, and the fourth chapter is, it talks about yagna, dedicating and all. Then the 7th to 12th talks about Tat. Tat means that God. That God which we think as that, who is that? So the entire description of Bhagavan is given in the 9th, in the 10th, in the 11th, in the 12th, the hallmarks of devotee, bhakti, yoga, all that is given in 7th to 12th chapter. And Asi, and you and that consciousness are one, is explained from 13th to 18th chapter. So the entire Tattva Masi is explained in 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And the fourth chapter teaches us how to purify our mind through yagna spirit, through dedicating activities to the totalized, and how to realize the truth and Guru Shishya Parampara, or the knowledge, how it is passed from guru to shishya, that we will talk in the first shloka, and how to calm our mind. So these are the topics that are covered in the fourth chapter, but we'll go into more detail verse by verse. So we'll start the fourth chapter. Atha chaturtho dhyayah. Atha means now. We are doing the fourth chapter, Chaturtho Dhyayah. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Imam Vivasvate Yogam. Proktavanaham Avyayam. Vivasvan Manave Prahaha. Manurikshvaka Vebravit. So Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. So the Lord said, Uvacha means it's in the past tense, because Bhagavad Gita occurred in the past. Shri Bhagavan, the blessed Lord, the dear Lord said, Imam Yogam. So this knowledge of Karma Yoga, Vivasvate, to the sun god, Vivasvan. So when did the sun appear? The sun appeared before creation, right? The sun appeared first, and then they say from the sun all the planets, 9 planets separated out, and as they cooled down, slowly life evolved on earth. Once the planets cooled down, then the plants came, and then, you know, dinosaurs and all that. So the sun god, the sun, which was the first one, Vivasvate Roktavan Aham Avyayam. I, Bhagavan Shri Krishna says, I taught this knowledge, this immutable yoga, this yoga which is eternal. Avyayam means eternal, ever the same. I taught this knowledge to the sun god. Actually, Arjuna will ask later on, you know, you were just born 60 or 65 years ago, Krishna. How could you have taught this knowledge to sun, which is billions of years old before time? So that is one of the questions that is always asked, but we'll cover that and then go into. So he says, Bhagavan Krishna says, I gave this knowledge to the sun god, Vivasvan Manave Prahu. Vivasvan, the Lord Sun, taught it to Manu. Manu is said to be the first human, just as Adam. Manu and Shatrupa are same as Adam and Eve. They are the first humans. So the sun god taught it to Manu, and Manu Ikshvakave, to Ikshvaku, the king Ikshvaku, Abravit. Bravit means spoke. Abravit means spoke in the past. Abravit. So let us see. So this knowledge is eternal. That's what they say, that the Sanatan Dharma, Hindu again is a wrong word. As he said, the true religion we belong to is Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma means the eternal Dharma. The knowledge was always there. The knowledge was always there right from the dawn of time. And always these rishis have been coming, and the Lord himself has given this knowledge. And the rishis in their meditation heard this knowledge in that. That's why it's called Shruti. And this knowledge is eternal, always there. And it is vid, comes from the word Veda, comes from the word vid, means to know. So this is knowledge. The Vedas are the eternal knowledge which teach us how to live our life. And it is the Guru Shishya Parampara. So Bhagavan Shri Krishna gave it to the sun god. Sun god gave it to Manu. Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. So it shows that this knowledge can only be transmitted Guru to Shishya. So how does Krishna say, I gave this knowledge? Because Krishna reveals his identity as Ishvara. That the Ishvara, the creator of the Lord, the entire universe, has manifested in human form as me. So he's revealing his divine nature for the first time, that I gave this knowledge. So Bhagavan Shri Krishna is revealing his divine nature as Ishvara. I have appeared on this earth. And it also shows that we always need help to learn, to grow. We cannot pick up this book and learn on our own or pick up. We need the help of a guru or a teacher. If somebody says, I read the book, but the book also was written by a teacher, talking about getting help. So Michelle and President Obama, when he was president, were eating dinner in a very fancy restaurant in Georgetown. Beautiful, very expensive restaurant. And they had ordered and food had not yet come. And the owner of the restaurant came to know that Michelle and President Obama is there. So he came and, you know, shook Obama's hand and, you know, hugged Michelle. And then he asked President, can I talk to her privately for a few minutes? So he said, okay, go ahead. So he took her to his room and they talked for a while. In the meantime, dinner came and dinner is getting cold and Michelle is still not here. Finally, she showed up. So he says, what were you talking about so long? She said, well, he was my childhood sweetheart. When I was in college, he was we were dating, and he really wanted to marry me, but I was focused on my career, and so I turned him down, and I didn't marry him. So Obama says, well, if you had married him, you would have been owner of this fine restaurant. She said, no, if I had married him, he would be president of the United States. You think you alone have done it? So in life, we don't know who helps us, where, at what time. So that's why one has to be grateful to the teacher, to the guru, for giving us this beautiful knowledge. That's what Krishna says. I taught this knowledge to the sun god, and sun represents time, because the time unit started when the sun lord appeared and the whole universe appeared, the whole 9 planets. So he says, I gave this knowledge even before time. Before sun god, I was there. And also another commentary interprets sun god as karma yoga, because the sun serves all of us without asking anything in return. Whether you curse the sun or you do the Gayatri mantra, the sun will still give you light, give you heat, give you the blessings. So the sun is the example of karma yoga. And then he says this knowledge was given to the royal sages. Ikshvaku represents the dynasty of kings. Ikshvaku was a king in whose dynasty Ramchandraji, Bhagwan Ramchandraji, appeared as one of the descendants of Ikshvaku. So he was the originator of this dynasty. And who was Ikshvaku? Maybe I'll spend a couple of minutes talking about the story and why the royal sages were important. Because it is said that if the rulers don't know what is right, how can they run the kingdom very well? Unfortunately, what we find nowadays, the rulers have become so corrupt that the whole country is corrupt. You know, if the ruler is corrupt, how can the country be run well? So same way, if the ruler is wise, then the country is run well. And so the rulers were first taught this knowledge, and then this knowledge was given to the brahmanas. It's very interesting. The brahmanas used to go to these royal kings, even to Janaka Maharaj. So many brahmanas came to learn from him. So it says that the king has to be taught this knowledge first, then and then alone the subjects will be good. So Ikshvaku had it's a very interesting story. I'll tell it. I may have a little less time for questions, but it's a beautiful story. So it said Ikshvaku was an evolved sage, and he had this knowledge. He was very, very evolved king who was a ruler, but very evolved. And it is said another king attacked his kingdom, Ikshvaku's kingdom. And Ikshvaku was so involved, he said, I'm not going to fight. If he wants to fight, he wants to take the kingdom, take it away. And I'm not even going to run away. I'm just going to live in a corner of the kingdom. And if food will come to me somehow or the other. So he gave up his kingdom without a fight. He said, I'm not going to fight. Of course, that's not the message Arjuna, Krishna gave Arjuna, but that's Ikshvaku's message. And so he gave up the kingdom like this other king and went to a small corner of the kingdom, lived in a small hut, and just meditated and studied the truth, went to, you know, pilgrimage places and all, and became a very evolved sage and continued to study. He said, I don't worry about the kingdom. And it so happened after a few years, the king died, the one who had taken over the kingdom, and he had no children. He had no children at all. So they said, now whom should we appoint king? You know, in those days, it was the custom that if there was no heir to the throne, a she-elephant would be given a garland, and she would have to go through the kingdom, and whoever's neck she put the garland in would be made the next king. So it is said this she-elephant was given the garland and she went through the entire kingdom, went to that hut, found Ikshvaku and put it on his neck that this is the rightful king. And so he was made king again. So that's how evolved he was. So this knowledge was given by me, Bhagavan says, to the sun god. Sun god gave it to the first human, Manu. Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. And that's how this Guru Shishya Parampara is continued. And that's why Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda gave us this commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, which we all study. And so it is the same Guru Shishya Parampara. He got it from his Guru Tapovan Maharaj. And so that's how this knowledge is going on from Guru to Shishya. And it is our duty to pass this knowledge on to our children and to others. Make this knowledge available. That's why my parents, actually it's very interesting, whenever they went to a wedding, they would always give Gurudev's Bhagavad Gita, that red book. They always gave a gift. Never, you know, there was in India, people gave all these other gifts. They said the best gift we can give the couple is Bhagavad Gita, so they should study and read it. So that is the duty of all of us, so to pass on this knowledge. And what do we get from this? He says, Aham Avyayam, I taught this knowledge. So what means that the Lord's grace is manifesting through the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan Sri Krishna's grace. And they say the grace is like a hook. I mean, just as a fish is caught in a hook and can't escape. Of course, that is not a good way. But what it means is that once this knowledge catches you, you can't escape. You are propelled to study it more and more and more. That's why Gurudev said spirituality is a one-way street. It's entry only. There's no exit. Once you are serious on this path, then this path holds you, because then you realize how much joy is in this. Then all the worldly joys become paltry. You know, eating an ice cream or going on travel or buying clothes and buying jewelry and buying a house and a new car. They're okay, you do them, but that becomes secondary. That's why this knowledge is like it takes you over. And that's why the grace of the Lord, of Sri Krishna's grace, must have been here, that all of us are here, you know, reading and studying about this. Every morning we should be thankful to Bhagavan for giving us this Bhagavad Gita and giving us this opportunity together for us to study. You know, it helps all of us, you know, when we discuss. And so, as we said, this knowledge shows that Krishna Bhagavan is the Ishwara, the creator, sustainer and destroyer of the entire universe, has appeared. That's why in the 11th chapter, he shows himself as the Supreme Consciousness. That in me, the entire universe, not only the entire universe, even all the gods and goddesses and devas, everything are seen in Krishna. In fact, even he showed his mother. He showed her when she asked him to open his mouth because he had eaten mud. And in his mouth, Yashoda mother saw the entire universe, all the gods, and then saw herself and Krishna sitting in. So Krishna wanted to show that I am the manifestation of the Supreme. Another thing, people have this idea that studying the Bhagavad Gita is for people who have nothing to do. You know, spirituality, oh, bekar log hain, theek hai, they are retired, now there is nothing to do. No. It is for people who have everything to do. Even as busy as we are, all these royal sages were taught. Why? Because not that they had nothing to do. They had to run the kingdom. And each one of us has to run our household, our business, our work, our practice. So Bhagavad Gita is for people who have everything to do. Not for, of course, for people who are retired, it is a must. But it is a must for all of us. So that is the essence of this first verse. I had prepared second verse, but then I was doing the summary of the entire Gita and the introduction to the fourth verse. So we'll do the second verse tomorrow, where Bhagavan will tell us what happened to this knowledge. Why is this knowledge lost? So, but we have a few minutes. If anybody has any other questions or comments. Yes?
So, going back on that Hindustan thing, I think all Hindus, this is just for discussion, all Hindus, people who call Hindus or Hindus, Hindi, whatever you want to say, they all don't believe in what four things say. So you already clarified that if I were to call, then I would say, yeah, I'm born in India, but I believe in Sanatan Dharma.
Yes.
And I make all myself Vedantin because I believe in Vedantin.
True. True. So Veda is the first thing, the Sanatana Dharma. And actually Hindustan is a Persian word. Our correct name is Bharata. It is, Bharata means Bharati, one who revels in knowledge. That's why Arjuna is also called Bharata. So the true meaning, the true name of India is Bharata. The Sanskrit word means Bharati, one who revels in knowledge. So Hindustan also is a name given by the Muslims to us. But which is good. We accept that. Nothing wrong with that. But the Sanskrit word for India was Bharata.
So the question is, why then Swami Tejomandanji used those characteristics as a Hindu?
No, because somebody asked him the question, who is a true Hindu? He didn't come up with that. Yeah. Somebody came and asked him, who is a true Hindu? So Swamiji said, these are the four major characteristics. There's, of course, so many minor, but these are that was his spontaneous answer at that time. So when their mind works through a lot of wisdom. Yes.
Whether you believe in Vedanta or not,
yes,
every human being has to follow through.
Yes.
And you eventually know that is the only truth that governs us. So whether you want to call Hindu, Christian or Muslim, this basic knowledge or basic laws don't change from one religion or another.
True.
So it is whether you may be not following the book that's written that way, but they even in their books it's the same thing.
Yes. Thank you. That's very true. So the same truth is eternal and is universal.
Written
in different languages, in different books. It is the same knowledge.
And
yes.
Hinduism is a way of life. It's not really. You cannot be just made Hindu.
Right.
What if you follow this, you are a Hindu.
Right. Right. You may not even be living in India or born in India. Right. True. Thank you.
Only difference is rituals are different in Islam.
Yes.
But that is the man-made thing.
Right. Right. That's not the knowledge part. Right. Thank you. Very true. Anything else?
I just have I've been thinking about this when I was reading the knowledge. And I was thinking about the desire for knowledge. So even the desire for knowledge is a desire. And doesn't get to the point where if you become desirous, you have all the knowledge and it's only at that point that all of
it. Yes, yes. Very good point. No, desire for knowledge is a pure desire, is a sattvic desire. Yes, and I must have the desire for knowledge, otherwise I won't go to a guru. I won't go and study. So that's a very good point, excellent point. But then ultimately, once this person has realized, and in Bhagavan Sri Krishna later on says, for a person who has realized, it's like you go to a well for water. But suppose the whole village is flooded, there's water everywhere. And then the well is included in that water. Suppose like we are unfortunately seeing floods. Then you don't need to go to the well to get water, you just reach out. So similarly for the wise person, the Vedas are like that well. While he was studying, he needed to go to the Vedas to get the knowledge. But once he's floating in that wisdom, ocean of knowledge, which is Bhagavan, which is that Atman, the Brahman, once he has identified and known his unity, then for him the Vedas are not useful. He may use them to teach others. In fact, Raman Maharishi, a great saint, a realized master who lived in the 20th century, was one time reading Upanishads. So they said, Bhagavan, they used to call him Bhagavan, God, because he was at the level of that. He says, why are you reading the Upanishads? You are a realized master. He says, I want to see what they have written about me. Means he was at the level of that Atman, the conscious. It was not an egotistical state. It was a Jason, I am the Atman. So I want to see what Upanishads say about me. And ultimately the understanding, that's why Ashtavakra Gita, Janak Maharaj, says that right from the creator to a blade of grass, they're all in me. Now, Janak Maharaj is maybe 6 feet. He is little. How can he say the creator to that blade of grass? That's his statement. Because having got the knowledge from the Gita, from the teacher, Ashtavakra, he says this whole universe is in me. Me, the Om, the Atman, the consciousness. So when you identify with that, then you can say, I am the sustainer and creator and destroyer of the whole universe. But I not as this limited I, but I as the true I, the consciousness. So that is the growth of the student. Very quickly, we have Swami Ramakrishnananda ji coming. He will be coming the last 30th October to November 3rd, which is Tuesday to Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Or whatever, 30th. I think Wednesday, Thursday, of 31st. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 5 days. So he will be in the evening speaking on success in life through Srimad Bhagavatam, not Bhagavad Gita, but Bhagavat. So the Tuesday to Friday he will be speaking in the evening, but Saturday his lecture will be in the morning because he has to leave by 1 o'clock. So Saturday he will be speaking from 9:30 to 11. So 5 days he will be talking on Bhagavat. And then in the noon time, 12 to 1, he will be teaching Sanskrit. So those who are interested in beginning Sanskrit, he will introduce the subject. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday, he will speak from 12 to 1 on an introduction to Sanskrit. We do have the interactive CD book in the office. You can buy that, where there is the CD, there is the book, and then there is the interactive exercises. So those who wish to have an introduction to Sanskrit can buy that from the office. And he will be introducing the, of course, Sanskrit is a complex language, but if you want to get started, then that's a good way. So 12 to 1, he will be talking Sanskrit from Wednesday to Saturday. He will be arriving on Tuesday. So 5 days, 4 evenings and 1 Saturday morning. So please attend that. He's a very good speaker. I have heard about him. I don't know him personally, but we all want success in life. So if you want success, you know where to find it. So we'll see you next week. We do have lunch today. There was no sponsor. So a couple of us, I think Kusum and we, have sponsored. So if you have not sponsored lunch, we do have openings available. So please do that. And see you next week. Thank you. Hari Om. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukkha Bhavave. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om. Hari Om.